degrees under fair skies. In New York City, 64 and sunny. From WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin.
The previous program was Leonard Lopate at Large, heard usually Monday through Friday at 1 p.m. Stay tuned for a special Earth Day special produced and hosted by the fine folks from Ecologic. That's coming up, and that will be on for a couple of hours. So stay tuned for that. This is WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
Pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth, tell me where we gonna plant our seed. It makes me wanna cry for the children. We could do, there's so much we could know if we listen to the earth.
Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day, but today really is. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Donna Stein, and this is Ecologic's three-hour Earth Day special for April 22nd, 2022.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
There are lots of ways to think about Earth Day. Today, we are exploring different perspectives, religion and climate, a climate denier discussion with listener phone calls, and women and the environment.
First up is a panel discussion with people from different religions talking about environmental issues from their perspectives.
Hi, I'm Beth Ackerman, and I am with the Beloved Earth Community, which focuses on climate change, at the Riverside Church. Also, I am a Green Faith Fellow, which is an environmental leadership program in religious communities. And finally, I'm a climate reality leader trainee, the Al Gore group. And as such, I am able to go around and give PowerPoint presentations about the climate, which I do with my scientist brother. He makes a great sidekick.
Hello, I'm Steve Knight. I'm a member of Church of the Holy Trinity. That's an Episcopal congregation on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. I also, like Beth, I am a Green Faith Fellow. I'm the founder and the facilitator of a monthly group called Religious Communities for Divestment and Reinvestment.
I'm Bright Flame, and I'm a teacher, a writer, a priestess in the reclaiming tradition of witchcraft. And I'm a lay scientist and lay naturalist as well, and I bring that work and my faith-based work to some extent into the education system.
I'm Sharon Abreu, and I am from a Jewish family. I'm a member of Tikkun and the Network of Spiritual Progressives, two sister organizations that give me a lot of hope with their vision for a healed world. And I've been doing environmental education since 1993, since I joined Hudson River Sloop Clearwater in 1992, and started educating myself about climate change in 1999, and off I went. So I've been doing climate change education since 2000, and I'm a singer and songwriter. So my partner and I started a nonprofit called Earthlings Arts-Based Environmental Education, and through music and theater and multimedia, we engage people on environmental issues and help people to kind of inspire people to become stewards of the earth.
The most obvious question is, how does faith form your environmental activism?
Good question, Ken. And a complex one, because I think we all come at faith from so many different levels, both from our perhaps family of origin and our experiences growing up, which in my case, I grew up with a Presbyterian minister father who he with my mother, the scientist, would go to the anti-war demonstrations in Washington, D.C. and bring us along. And I sort of conflate the two aspects of growing up in the church, the religious part and the activism part. That's sort of part of my DNA. And so now as an adult, having reconnected with a more formal church environment, I'm excited to find a place like Riverside that's long been known for its social activism. And I've found some real interest in the people there who are as passionate about the creatures, the people who are going to be suffering more under climate change than the people who are more well-to-do. And it's a very rich vein, and I'm just honored to be in it. I think that's a good introductory statement for it.
There's a number of ways that I could approach this whole issue of how I got involved with the faith-centered side of environmentalism. What we do very much believe happened is the core of that story, which is what we call the incarnation, that God came down to earth in the form of a person. And the implication of all of that, of course, is theologically, is that we don't believe in a God that is something abstracted, that is just something up in the sky. We believe that God exists in the materiality of the world around us. God is embodied in the world. And it's the incarnational aspect, I think, of my faith tradition that drew me very strongly to want to be a faith-centered environmentalist.
So much richness in what you both said. I have so many things popping in my head. Where to begin? For me, and what brought me to a witchcraft tradition, is the sacredness of the earth. My knowing in my gut, knowing in my being that the earth is sacred. And that's my bottom line. That's what informs all of my work, whether it's my work in the field of education, whether it's my work teaching in my tradition, writing. And it's an immanence. It's something like what Steve was referring to about God coming down to earth. I believe my cosmology is that the goddess, which is what I call the energetic, widest, most unknowing est, the from our point on this planet, the most vast mystery that's both the Earth itself, the grain of soil itself, and the whole universe in its vastness is what I call Goddess. And it's an immanence I'm part of, you're all part of. All beings, all trees, all rocks, all soil, all microbes, all fungi are part of this. And it's a very experiential thing for me. And so my purpose here, I've come to believe, is to help others connect that the earth is sacred and to feel that. And to me, that's the root of an environmentalism that can really take off.
Well, I really have always been the kind of person who likes to be walking outside, walking in the woods. And as I've gotten older, I lived in the city for quite a number of years, and I started feeling more of a need, you know, that growing need to be in, you know, quote unquote nature. And, you know, because I didn't really ever used to think of myself as being a part of nature, really, but I did have things in my background that connected me to nature, you know, for example, through Judaism. There are holidays that connect you with nature. There's Tu B'Shvat, which is the Jewish Arbor Day, you know, the new year for trees and the planting of trees, and you know, understanding how you need to take care of trees, and in order to have them bear the fruit that you want, you know, and Passover, the symbolism of all the different things that you eat, you know, which is this is spring festival in part, you know, or maybe more than in part, you know, and just appreciating, well, why are we eating this? Why are we eating that? How is that connected to the earth, you know, and to our lives? And there's other things too, like Sukkot, and where you're eating in a little temporary outdoor shelter, and you're eating specific foods and specific fruits, and learning about the value of these and really experiencing them, the harvest festival. So there's a, you know, there's a lot that connects you to the earth, and also for me, a lot of it is really a sense of responsibility. You know, on Yom Kippur, and it's the Day of Atonement, and you actually put your fist on your chest, and you say, "We have done this, and we have done that, and we have done this." And it doesn't matter whether you personally have done that. You know, you take responsibility for the, you know, if you want to say sins or mistakes, you know, of the whole community. And that's how I feel about the planet. It's that it's my responsibility to be a steward, you know, and to try to help other people to reestablish that connection, because we've lost it to a large degree. You know, hear somebody say, "Oh, I'm not into the environment," and I'm thinking, "Well, you are," you know. And the more you know that, the better off you'll be, you know. So, but I find a lot of solace in nature and walking in the woods and water and sunshine and all of, you know, just being part of being having really a sense of awe and wonder at the magnificence of what's around me. Don't you think it's related to politics? That's my first answer.
Yeah.
I don't have statistical evidence about this, but it seems as though one side of the political spectrum has a vested interest and that they've aligned with larger corporate interests. And my suspicion is, I don't have proof, that it's trickled back down into the power base, which is related to some types of churches in the country. So I think you can say anything on TV and radio and get away with it. It's done every day of the week, and that's why it's a good thing that this program is going on to sort of counteract that. A related question I'm interested in is how can progressive religious people really harness the power and the passion that we do have, and you could see that we have it because 10,000 of us, and that's just a small number, were on the street just down the block from where we are today in September during the People's Climate March. So that was the largest group of religious people gathered ever to on behalf of the climate in New York City. They're marching through the streets very effectively. And I was thinking about what the ripple down effect might have been from that. And because the climate talks are in Peru, building up to that, there was the sort of secretly arrived at negotiations between Obama and the Chinese premier. I'm feeling like he's hearing us. Maybe I'm a cockeyed optimist, but you know, I've seen him say several times, talking about the Keystone Pipeline and how he's said some pretty strong things just recently about how, oh, it's a Canadian enterprise, it's going to benefit them and not our country, and it's just going to befoul our natural resources. And that sounds pretty clear to me that he's getting the message. And I'm not at all sure he would have gotten the message had not 350.org and Bill McKibben's group, et cetera, worked so hard to raise consciousness about that. So I think that in similar way, the faith community is now getting lined up, getting ready to make an impact.
I certainly second that, what you said there. I think just for a moment to speak to the issue Ken raised about why do some people find it so difficult to think that a religious person could also be an environmental person. I think one thing we have to acknowledge here is that to a certain extent an anti-environmental attitude has been written or inscribed into people's interpretation of scripture, at least within the Judeo-Christian tradition. You know, the very first book of our sacred scripture for Christians and Jews, which is the book of Genesis, includes a passage that's generally translated to say man is meant to have dominion over the earth. That's the way that word is usually interpreted. And that, for centuries, unfortunately, has been interpreted by many religious people to believe that we have a license to have unlimited mastery over the earth regardless of the consequences. I think that over the past 50 or 60 years with the birth of the modern environmental movement, that's slowly begun to catch on with some parts of the religious community here in this country, but I think it's been a big inherent prejudice for us to overcome. And, you know, I think with some sectors of the religious communities, you know, some faith traditions in this country still have not come around fully to really questioning that. So, I mean, I think we have to openly acknowledge that it's an ongoing challenge.
I'm glad you said that and not me, Steve. When Ken asked that, but I know I think it's true, and I think the work of Thomas Berry and others of his ilk to change the story. He talked about storytelling, and he said our older story, which didn't go back to the beginning of humankind. If you look at the work of, for instance, Maria Gimbutas, the anthropological archaeologist who did a lot of work on the Neolithic. But since the biblical age, the Judeo-Christian traditions at least, that dominion over earth was a really strong, compelling story. And the earth was dirty, just like the interpretation through a lot of the millennia, the past couple of millennia, is women are earthy and they're dirty, right? So You know, they bleed, they give birth. Ugh. You know? So things having to do with the earth were dirty, and we're better than that. We wash our, we don't even touch that stuff, and it's all resources for us to use. So that's the old story that, yeah, I think maybe not enough yet of religious communities have moved away from. But storytelling and telling this new story about the interconnectedness of us all and humans' place in the natural world as just being a part, not the dominating, predominant part. That's important, and it is emerging now.
Well, you know, when I got involved in, actually it was in 2003 with Tikkun and Network of Spiritual Progressives, which was just, that's the interfaith branch of Tikkun, you know, and it started in 2003, and I happened to go to a conference in D.C., and I was so excited about it, because I really thought, you know, this is, like, I'm a Jewish person, but I don't like walls. I don't like, I'm different from you because I believe this, or because I have this practice, or whatever. I mean, I'm just, my personal thing is, I'm not really comfortable with that, you know, and so the interfaith group really appealed to me, and so you have people from every religion, every denomination, you've got some agnostics and even a couple of atheists, yeah, in this organization, you know, and people coming together to really say, we are people of faith, we have these values that we share with other people, and why is it that, you know, and going back to that, talking about the political right is speaking to people's values, you know, and speaking in terms of faith, and at the same time undermining those values in what's happening in the corporate world in a very significant way. Whereas the left, you know, and Rabbi Lerner talks about this because he was a social psychologist before he became a rabbi, and he did a lot of research on this all over the country. And, you know, whereas the left is not comfortable talking in terms of religion, you know, or faith or values. And the left is very up in the head and giving you good facts. And why aren't we getting where we need to be? You know, it's not that people on the left don't have values. It's just they don't talk about them the same way. Mm-hmm. And so it's harder to connect with people. And so that's a real challenge for people on the left who many people may have had a bad experience with religion, you know, or something where they found some injustice or something that they weren't comfortable with or something in the history or whatever, you know. You know, for me, it has something to do with being a woman, you know, in Judaism. And the mixed messages that I got growing up, you know. It's like, well, you can do this, but you can't do that. You know, you can learn this, but then you can't do that. And so I don't like the walls. And so I'm excited about seeing everybody come together. And I'm really encouraged by seeing groups popping up. You know, I had seen an issue of Mother Jones, and this goes back, I think, more than 10 years now, that had an article about evangelists that are concerned about climate change. And I'm going, yeah, finally, thank you, you know. But, yeah, these things are happening, but you don't hear them on the news every day. You know, there's a group called Restoring Eden, you know, and I started meeting people from that group at an environmental conference. You know, there's COGIL, which is the coalition of it's a coalition on the environment in Jewish life. You know, doing a lot of great stuff, trying to reach out, trying to get communities that are not necessarily jumping in and becoming environmental stewards with both feet, helping them to see the connections and helping to see how it's really important that the faith community, you know, becomes, you know, rather than that image of dominion, be stewards of the earth, you know, really honor it.
Because I would just add, you know, one part of being a Green Faith Fellow is that we are expected to learn more not only about how our own faith tradition has a relationship to the earth, but also to look at other faith traditions. And, you know, I think my big takeaway from that, from spending time while I was a fellow looking at the environmental writings of people from non-Christian traditions, is just how, you know, this a sense of we all have a responsibility to be stewards of the earth is written into every major faith tradition in this world. And it comes out, of course, in various ways in the different traditions, but it's there. I mean, it's tremendously empowering to learn about that. I don't know if you had the same response, you know, when you studied this, but it certainly moved me to have learned about that while I was a fellow.
Well, I was amazed. We did have a side trip to a Hindu temple, and I knew nothing about the Hindu religion, and I now know a little bit. And so the little bit that stuck with me is just how tremendously environmental they really that faith tradition really is. And also there's a big misperception about, oh, the Hindus have all these different gods. And they said, no, it's actually just different faces of the same one god. And so I found that to be fascinating. I'm interested, too, in what you were saying about the Thomas Berry news story, because we had David Corten come and speak to us one afternoon at the church, and he's doing a lot of thinking about not only about what's fair economically around the world, but how are we going to turn into the next story that's going to save humanity, if we are, you know. And he's really analyzed about the different traditions, the Judeo-Christian tradition, the Abrahamic tradition, being one, as he sort of calls it, the God with the long hair sitting in the sky, you know, that kind of tradition. And then it's being superseded by the scientific approach, and how then there was such discounting of anything that was called Abrahamic or, you know, had that aspect to it. And his conclusion was, well, we need to fashion a new story, because once you have a story as a people, that informs the path you go on. And so he's a strong believer in going back to an old sacred earth story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, between that and a lot of reading that we've been doing about evolution and the universe's evolution and what part do we play in it, you know, I'm tremendously excited by those ideas, not to say that I know how it's all going to work out.
This was recorded in 2014, not long after the People's Climate March, and it is interesting to hear how things have changed, or not.
To get some additional perspectives, we talked to a few other people about their thoughts on religion and environment. Here's Reverend Gregory Simpson of the Narashawn Presbyterian Church in Pearl River.
Ecology and environmental justice embody acts of resurrection. And we as individuals, whatever the journey of spirituality that we are on, embody that act or those acts of resurrection. You know, we are called to transform and to change and to uplift. And that's not only just for people, but it's also for the earth that we protect.
We also talked to pagans Eric and Heather. A few years ago, they had Ken speak on renewable energy and energy efficiency at one of their conferences. Here's what Eric told us. I'm Eric, and I am pretty much Wiccan as well as agnostic and pantheist together. My practicality drives my environmentalism. You have to take care of how you breathe and how you eat and drink, and this planet, this ecosphere, can only take so much carbon and filth. And you can recycle some of it, but not a lot of it. That's just the way it is. It's a very fragile system. Where my spirituality comes in is that I believe my spirituality and the practical is one and the same. There is no difference between the physical world and the spiritual world for me. So if you're messing up the physical world, you're also messing up the spiritual world. The planet has given birth to not only the amazing life forms that you'll find all over in sub-ecospheres, very different parts of the planet, but also with the advance of humans, we have the intelligence to sit down and talk about these things so we can pass them on and have the generational knowledge being passed on and people building on that. And to waste that is another wasted resource if you do that.
And Heather had this to say. I'm Heather, and as a result of my mother's environmentalism, I found myself hiking and backpacking in some amazing natural settings. And instead of having an interesting time with spiritual ideas the way I did every Sunday growing up, well, there I was having a religious experience in nature, among the gods in nature. Since then, I have been trying to build a relationship with Mother Gaia, with nature, with the seasons, with the weather, with the sun and the moon, and learn how to speak to them and listen to them.
From the Unitarian Universalist Ministry for Earth, we hear that one of the UU core principles is respect for the independent web of all existence of which we are a part. At the 2014 People's Climate March in New York City, UUs, despite being a relatively small denomination, made up the second largest faith group present after the Catholic contingent.
We are in a three-hour ecologic special for Earth Day. Next week, we'll be back at a regular time, 2:30 to 2:55. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. Here's Sharon Abreu singing The Balance.
Media avoids religion completely, except, of course, for holidays with commercials attached to them. You'll never hear a discussion like this on commercial radio or television, except for a specifically religious station. We have a great package available to you called Religion and Unintelligent Design for a donation of $75. It's a CD-DVD combo with the panel you just heard and biologist Dr. Abby Hafer speaking on the subject of unintelligent design. Go to www.givetowbai.org and click donate, then scroll down to premium selection and type in religion and environment. Or call 212-209-2950 to make a pledge, or with a monthly donation, become a BAI buddy.
Many progressives seem uncomfortable talking about religion. We have the values, but don't express them the same way. The one exception is Native American religion or spirituality. Here's another part of the panel discussion from our religion and environment video created for Ecologic by the Environment TV, which you can have along with a CD of the Unintelligent Design episode of Ecologic for a donation of $75 to WBAI. Just call us at 212-209-2950.
And really, a lot of people look, when they say we want to take on a new story, a lot of them look back to the indigenous stories of the earth. And that's witchcraft. I just want to say this, that witches really are the indigenous peoples of Europe. because there were indigenous peoples. Indigenous to me doesn't necessarily mean we lived in huts or we lived in tents or we lived in, you know, whatever, and we baked in this particular way and we hunted for... It means that they knew the earth was sacred and they listened to the earth and they felt themselves part of the earth. And they were, as a part of the earth, they took on the responsibility of stewardship of the earth by their nature, by their understanding of sacredness. And that was the way of life. So really, that's what we're all looking, you know, we here at this table and so many others around the world now, are not looking to go back and live in tribal society necessarily, but we're looking for that story that maybe our ancestors worked with. And it might be our ancestors from 1,000 years ago, or 2,000 years ago, or 8,000 years ago. Or for some, it might be our ancestors from 50 years ago. Because there are indigenous peoples who tend to be the frontline communities of climate change now, something that was really brought home for me in the People's Climate March narrative, that the frontline communities, the global south, a lot of these indigenous communities are the ones who are going to be most affected by climate change more quickly. The ones who will be underwater, who will have the tidal waves.
That's why I feel like, you know, I feel like I'm part of an earth community. You know, and David Corton actually talks about that. You know, he describes earth, moving towards earth community. You know, he's got some great books, The Great Turning and Agenda for a New Economy and other books. For me, I really see that. I see myself, and then I see my immediate community, my wider community, and my global community, because what I do here doesn't stay here. It doesn't only affect me. It doesn't only affect my next-door neighbor, you know. I really see what I do is affecting the whole world. How am I contributing to the suffering people in South America or in Africa or in Alaska, you know, where their towns are disappearing because of the melting, you know, the ice caps and the permafrost and the beach, you know, the erosion. It's just, how are my habits, my everyday habits that I don't even think about, that I've grown up with, how is that affecting these people? You know, it may not be affecting me. It may not be affecting me in an obvious way yet. You know, but how am I responsible? And to me, that's it's a big deal. You know, we had a thing in Washington, I live now in the Pacific Northwest, in the northwest corner of Washington State. And what's happening in the Pacific Northwest right now is we have become ground zero for oil and coal exports. You know, Peabody Coal wants to ship, you know, millions of tons of coal through northwest ports to Asia, you know, to be burned there, and then all of that pollution will come back to us and the global warming and all that. But they want to make, it's like this last gasp of make every last penny that you can and do it now, because pretty soon it's just going to be obsolete, it's not going to be economically viable, so shove it all through now. And that's what's happening, and it's right where we live. So where coal was not a problem for us a few years back, I do this show called The Climate Monologues, and I had started doing a couple of monologues from people I met from West Virginia that were struggling with mountaintop removal coal mining. Coal was not an issue for us where we live. We have like this much coal in our energy mix. However, now coal is a problem for us.
Yeah.
It's a big problem. And oil as well, Bakken crude, Alberta tar sands oil. We have oil refineries, and their plans to expand them and use them as oil export terminals. And these would be these humongous tankers going through these narrow straits that are already crowded and treacherous. And what's the likelihood of an accident happening that would completely devastate the environment and tons of local economies?
Yeah.
You know, and we're fighting this, and thousands and thousands and thousands of people are fighting this, and writing comments for comment period after comment period after comment period, and spending thousands of hours of unpaid time, and to push back against this industry that wants these profits. And it's just, you know, I just consider it seriously immoral.
that this is even being considered, you know. But something really remarkably transformative is happening in response to this. And there is a new alliance that formed over the summer called the Not Samat.
And that's happening on every continent. We have the exact same thing here with the fracking going on in particularly Pennsylvania. Yeah. The pipelines that are being put in like webs all through our Earth, the export terminals that are planned all along the coast. But it's happening on every continent. And all these grassroots alliances are growing and popping up, and it's such a fight, and so necessary. And still, you know, the corporate power that's amassed globally.
If I might just be permitted here, just perhaps to put this in a little wider perspective, if you don't mind, we should talk about capitalism just a little bit here.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean. It's been very well known. I mean, it was certainly commented on by Marx and by Engels and by a number of other people that the first stage of capitalist production was to remove people from the land, was to take people who were able to subsist upon the land itself and remove them from that land and to put them into cities where they were then dependent upon the wages provided by the capitalists, and they would of course work in his factories for that wage. And you know, one theme I keep coming back to all the time is, you know, we don't just have an ecological crisis here, we have an economic crisis.
Oh, yeah.
And I wouldn't pretend that overthrowing capitalism is anything that's going to happen within our lifetimes of anyone here, but I think we need to question a lot of the assumptions here. And you know, to bring it back to religion again, you know, I'll say this, being an Episcopalian, you know, the Episcopal Church is part of the Anglican Communion. Anglicanism began in England in the 16th century. So, you know, the origins of my own faith tradition go back to about the time that capitalism as we know it started. And in some respects, my faith tradition and many prominent people in it have supported the assumptions of the capitalist economy quite wholeheartedly. And I can't run away from that kind of history. Now, the kinds of things that you're talking about, Sharon, going on up in the Pacific Northwest, and that you were also talking about, Breitling, I mean, I think that this is the kind of pushback against the assumptions of an extractive economy that looks to take what is in the earth as an object that can be commodified and sold for money elsewhere. And people are pushing back against that. And it's coming from certainly not just religious people, but it's coming from religious communities. So that's my little spiel about capitalism for now.
That makes me think of something Sharon said earlier about the discomfort that the left has. Environmentalists are in the left. You know, we may not have been in the 60s, but we are now. The discomfort with spirituality and religion, with one major exception, which you had mentioned, which is Native American. You know, if you're in a meeting and you're discussing capitalism or the government or pollution or corporate irresponsibility, whatever, nobody wants to talk about religion or spirituality unless somebody brings up something Native American, a quote from a Native American elder or something. Suddenly, that wisdom, everybody's like, yeah, that's it. And yet, whatever religious background they personally have, they won't mention it at the meeting, or they've squelched it inside of them or something. And yet, of course, we're in America, so maybe, you know, that's the best tradition to have, is one that started here. I don't know. I don't know what it's like in Europe. Are they quoting, you know, the indigenous Europeans of centuries ago? And your comment about the history of the Anglican Church. And so I'm wondering how this all comes together. It sounds like there's something, because it's all come up in this short conversation we've had today.
I see there's a lot of breaking down of walls, and that really appeals to me. It was like the Berlin Wall is coming down in all different kinds of ways and all different kinds of places. You know, for example, I know Native Americans that are Christians.
Right. Yes.
You know, and their people suffered a lot under Christianity, and in some, you know, really, really devastating ways. But they are Christians. But they also have their tribal, you know, their indigenous, their practices. You know, and they're in harmony okay with that. It works, you know. Wangari Maathai, who was, she won the Nobel Peace Prize in 2004. Unfortunately, she passed away from cancer a couple of years ago at the age of 71, way too young. She, you know, is a woman from Kenya, first African woman, first environmentalist to win the Nobel Peace Prize, and she was Christian. You know, and she has this very deep connection to the earth, and her whole life is about planting trees for peace, for people to be able to grow peaceful communities through having a harmonious environment and having food and being self-sustaining. You know, so there's a lot of harmony here.
Yeah, I've been noticing the way in which we as a church are going to need, in my view, to have a kind of more porous kind of affect to the outside world if we're going to survive. That's my view. And I think that these big, beautiful edifices that were built 100 years ago and more are not a sustainable kind of place to be unless more people can come in who are not necessarily completely lined up with every kind of theological idea that historically has been in that edifice. So it's kind of a vague idea, but it's one that I think if churches can become kind of spiritual community centers, that doesn't mean that the traditional church services shouldn't continue to be existing in some way, shape, or form. And anyway, it's not up to me to decree what's going to happen. It's just that I was having a conversation with a woman the other day. She wanted to be there at church. She came to the coffee hour, but she said, "Well, I can't join because I don't believe in God." And I said, "Oh, but you want to be here because you like the work that's going on here, and you like the peace and the sense of community." Yeah, I get it. So again, I'm in favor of a more porous kind of approach to church.
We're watching birds flying back and forth outside the window. The birds are flying back.
There are common misconceptions in a lot of circles about how religion is perceived by people with different views on religion, that religion and caring about the environment or how the environment is perceived are separate, or that environmental people don't care about religion, how the environment is perceived by religious people, or how religion is perceived by environmentalists. We're here to tell you that the commonalities that we're finding is that the physical world and the religious world are intricately interconnected, are built on each other, that there is not a separation between them. Everything from paganism to the major monotheistic religions will talk about the glory and beauty of nature. What is that? That beauty is what we're looking at, and the commonality between every issue, social justice, environmental justice, big polluters, every day taking care of our energy needs, it's all related. Our Ken Gale gave a talk on connecting the dots, which is available to you as a premium, by the way, which became the first project of the Environment TV. Those dots are all reasons that we need environmentalism. We want to make sure that environmentalism is a core part of how people feel and a large part of what WBAI is about. And we hope that you agree. WBAI needs your help. Every nonprofit needs your help. You know that by now. You know that because we are asking for money all the time. It is never any more true than with the environment. People need to realize that you vote with your dollars. That is giving your support. We may think that radio is free. It seems free because it comes over the airwaves. But guess what? There are costs involved, from our transmittal tower to lights in the studio to our sound equipment and our few paid staff. Every organization that is near and dear to your heart needs your help. Every group to which you pay attention, and you are paying attention to us right now because you're listening, we all need dollars to exist. there are always expenses involved. All those organizations represented by WBAI and Ecologic, so giving to WBAI supports many of your interests. What we hope you will do is show us that you care about having environmental programming, and the way that you can do that, the best way to do that, is becoming a buddy so that we can budget. That way we know month to month what our budget is at WBAI, and then we can also know as an individual radio show that we, Ecologic, has your support to create the environmental news and announcements and entertainment that you need and enjoy. We have frequent celebration of nature series and heavy-duty exposés of the commercial corporate interests that we know are putting profits above people. Programming that you hear on Ecologic are not what you will hear anywhere else. Other outlets don't want you to know what their corporate sponsors are doing to water or to expose the plastic pollution, the PCBs in the river that Clearwater works on, but you'll hear that on WBAI. You'll get that knowledge. We give you solutions. Our guests let you know what you can do about those problems, who to call, who to write to, websites to visit. Ecologic is a valuable resource, and we need you to call 212-209-2950. For those online, go to give2wbai.org. We need you to donate to receive a premium that you can use to educate yourself or to play for people you care about to educate them as well. The things that we talk about on this Earth Day special are bits and pieces of shows that we've played in the past, our shows on butterflies and octopuses, for instance. They are things that we care about and know that you care about because we do a lot of promotion. We want you to be on our email list. We know that you care. We need you to care with your dollars. We know that you care about other shows in BAI. That's great. But we also need you to donate in the name of Ecologic. Get a premium or become a buddy and get on our email list. We love our listeners and appreciate you. Back when WBAI was under attack by the rogue faction of Pacifica, remember that? Which is dormant, but not gone. We may need to do that fight again. During that time, we heard from you. We found out who some of you are. We got to meet some of you and really appreciate the personal feedback that we got. It's rare for radio shows to get that feedback. So once again, please donate to WBAI in the name of Ecologic. Get a premium, become a BA buddy. You get info, we get to keep broadcasting. It's a win-win for everybody. Possibly when you are hanging out with your family or friends, you may find yourself with climate deniers. It happens. Our discussion on climate deniers will give you the answers you need in those conversations. We will open in the 3 o'clock hour today to call-ins. Climate deniers are people who don't believe in the science. We believe in science. And by the way, the religious discussion is not the opposite of that. Scroll through Ecologic premiums for religion and unintelligent design and the Pope's encyclical to hear more. We have all sorts of interesting premiums for your donations. Go to www.give2wbai.org and click donate. Then scroll down to premium selection, type eco-logic in the search box, and browse through 5 pages of Ecologic options, or call 212-209-2950 and say that you want to be a member or contribute monthly as a WBAI buddy. Help keep environmental news and announcements on the air. Ecologic Earth Day special continues for the next 2 hours, so stay tuned. From 3 to 4, we talk about climate deniers, some of what they say and how to deal with their lies, misconceptions, and half-truths. From 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock is women and the environment. Women have always been the majority of the environmental movement since well before Rachel Carson 60 years ago, or before the women who established the National Audubon Society about 100 years ago. We'll hear from Rachel Carson, Helen Caldicott, Judy Barry, and more women of the environment.
It shines on the nations of the earth. All who share this thing called life celebrate each day's rebirth.
So expensive energy. So
WPFW in Washington, and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns with some brief news headlines. The Federal Reserve will likely move quickly to raise policy interest rates and curtail inflation, Fed Chair Jerome Powell said yesterday at a panel discussion hosted by the International Monetary Fund. Powell said a half-point rate increase, larger than the typical quarter-point hike, could be on the table for the Fed's upcoming policy meeting scheduled for early May. Raising interest rates as the Fed intends is expected to increase borrowing costs for businesses and consumers, reducing demand for goods and services. That reduction in demand is meant to reduce upward price pressures on the economy, which is also continuing to face inflationary supply shortages. Powell's statement yesterday underscores expectations from investors that the Fed will raise its policy interest rate in half-point increments at each of its next three meetings over the summer. The family of Emmett Till, a black teen brutally murdered in 1955, is demanding the arrest of the white woman who sparked Till's lynching by accusing him of improper advances. Carolyn Bryant Dunham had been named in an arrest warrant 67 years ago over her role in Till's kidnapping, but police at the time did not follow through on the warrant. Till's murderers, one of whom was Dunham's husband, were eventually acquitted by an all-white jury. The Justice Department had reopened an investigation into Till's killing last year after a book was published quoting Dunham as recanting her claims about Till acting improperly. The DOJ closed that investigation in December after the book's author failed to produce proof of the quote. Still, the Till family believes that Dunham can and should be arrested on the warrant. Till was 14 at the time of his murder. A federal judge yesterday temporarily blocked a restrictive new abortion law in Kentucky, which providers say essentially eliminates all abortion services in the state. The new law bans abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy and requires pregnant people to be examined by a doctor before receiving abortion pills. The law makes no exceptions for rape or incest. It also contains new reporting requirements that Kentucky clinics said they could not immediately comply with. On that point, U.S. District Judge Rebecca Grady Jennings agreed and issued an order restraining enforcement of the law for at least 14 days. The judge, however, said she was not ruling on the overall constitutionality of the new law, but will consider that aspect when she decides whether to block the law's enforcement before her temporary order expires in 14 days. Today is the 52nd anniversary of the first Earth Day, and to mark the occasion, President Joe Biden signed an executive order that seeks to address the effect of the climate crisis on America's forests. The order requires the Forest Service, the Bureau of Land Management, and the National Park Service to identify threats to older trees, such as wildfire and climate change, and develop policies to safeguard them. Scientists say mature and old-growth forests remove carbon pollution from the atmosphere, but many climate activists say Biden's initiative hardly goes far enough. As Food and Water Watch National Organizing Manager Thomas Meyer said in a statement, quote, protecting forests without addressing the root cause of the climate crisis, namely the continued extraction and burning of fossil fuels, will do very little to slow global warming, end quote. Climate activists were expected to protest outside Biden's event in Seattle and demand that he take bolder action to address the climate crisis. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 75 degrees and mostly cloudy. In New York City, 69 degrees with fair skies. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns. Thanks for listening.